and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, July 5th, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In local news headlines, man sentenced to probation for calling in fake bomb threat to Dubuque Hospital. A former Dubuque man has been sentenced to 2 to 5 years of probation for calling in a fake bomb threat to a Dubuque hospital. Curtis M. Kies, 40, now of Oklahoma City, was recently given the sentence in the Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to a charge of false report of an explosive or incendiary device. The sentence was issued by Iowa District Court Judge Michael Schubot. Court documents state that police responded on July 23, 2021, to Mercy 1 Dubuque Medical Center after a bomb threat was reported. The hospital switchboard had received a call from a person with an Oklahoma area code and with a caller ID of Curtis Kies, documents state. The caller told the switchboard operator that there was a bomb in the building. A Dubuque County emergency dispatcher also received a call from the same telephone number that day reporting that the caller had fallen at the intersection of 23rd Street and Central Avenue. The dispatcher recognized Kies' voice due to having taken dozens of harassing calls from Kies over her career, documents state. Kies' mother, Tina M. Womack, told authorities that Kies had made similar bomb threats to hospitals in Texas, where she lives, documents state. As part of a plea deal, an unrelated charge of depositing or throwing litter on a highway was dismissed. That charge was related to an August 24, 2020 incident in which Kies was accused of throwing a bottle filled with gasoline onto the street and starting a fire in the 2300 block of White Street. Kies was living in that area at the time. Mom seeks help in finding lost toy belonging to special needs child. A Lancaster, Wisconsin mom is reaching out to the Dubuque community via social media to help track down a special toy lost at a local store. Ann Yersek said her son Mac, who has multiple health challenges, lost his favorite stuffed penguin when it inadvertently fell from the family's vehicle in the Sam's Club parking lot in Dubuque on Sunday when the family was picking up a grocery order. Yersek said for Mac, the toy was a very real best friend and his partner in coping with his complex medical challenges, which include more than 4 disorders and dozens of other medical problems, including fetal alcohol syndrome and autism. The boy, now 12, recently underwent an experimental brain surgery, as he is one of a handful of people worldwide with one of his rare progressive neurological involuntary movement disorders, she said. Mac was our medically fragile foster child who came to us with little hope of his survival at 17 months and failing, she wrote in the post that had been shared more than 1,100 times. They said he would never this or never that. Matt has proved them wrong. He is a miracle. A tiny teacher who shows us so much heart and determination and never feels sorry for himself. Because of his challenges, Mac has been homebound since the pandemic, leaving him only Fury the penguin to play with and is devastated by his loss, his mother shared. Sam's Club's management and Dubuque police have assisted the family in trying to locate the toy, but it has not yet been recovered. Anyone with information about the lost toy can contact Ann Yersek at 608-331-0149 or annie's tribe12@gmail.com. The family is offering a reward. Police: wrong way driver causes crash, faces drug charges in Dubuque. Police said a woman driving a stolen vehicle the wrong way on a Dubuque street crashed into another vehicle and fled the scene. Brandy M. Rausch, 39, of 2080 Mullen Road, was arrested at 8:44 p.m. Sunday on charges of first-degree theft, possession of methamphetamine, possession of marijuana, possession of cannabidiol, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Rausch also was cited with driving on the wrong side of a two-way highway, driving while suspended, failure to provide proof of financial liability, and leaving the scene of an accident. Court documents state that Dubuque police responded to the scene of a two-vehicle crash at about 5:05 p.m. at Asbury Road and University Avenue. Investigators learned that a vehicle driving south in the northbound lane of Asbury Road struck a vehicle driven by John J. Bakey, 70, of East Dubuque, Illinois. Bakey was transported by a private vehicle to Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital to be evaluated, according to Dubuque police. A witness had followed the vehicle that fled the scene, and it was located unoccupied in a parking lot. Witnesses described a female leaving the vehicle and running toward Penn Place Apartments. Officers found Roush hiding in bushes in the rear of the apartments and saw that she had had injuries that were, quote, consistent with someone in a recent car accident, documents state. An investigation determined that the vehicle Roush had been driving was stolen from McGrath's Chevrolet and had stolen license plates. Police searched the vehicle with the owner's permission and found methamphetamine, marijuana, CBD oil, and drug paraphernalia. Roush was transported by officers to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center for treatment of her injuries. Dubuque man accused of stabbing woman no longer charged with attempted murder. Story by Kaylee Reese at thmedia.com. A Dubuque man accused of stabbing a woman in the neck is no longer charged with attempted murder. Christopher Callejas Gonzalez, 24, of Dubuque, recently pleaded not guilty in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County to charges of willful injury causing serious injury, first-degree attempted burglary, going armed with intent, and assault with a dangerous weapon. Callejas Gonzalez initially was charged with attempted murder and going armed with intent. However, the attempted murder charge was not filed in his trial information. County Attorney C.J. May III said in an email to the Telegraph Herald that Assistant County Attorney Joshua Sims is handling the case. Sims indicates that in his analysis, the evidence did not support filing a charge of attempted murder due to a lack of sufficient evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant did lawfully and intentionally attempt to cause the death of the victim, he wrote. Rather, the evidence did support filing the charge of willful injury causing serious injury. Court documents state that police responded to 2340 Central Avenue on June 3rd after the stabbing was reported. Officers saw Melissa A. Honeyfield, 40, of Dubuque, standing outside and holding a bedsheet to cover about a 2-inch puncture wound on the side of her neck. She was taken by ambulance to Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital. Medical staff advised that the knife had missed all major arteries and caused only tissue damage. Documents state. Honeyfield told police that she didn't know the man who attacked her, documents state, but Callejas Gonzalez called 911 to report that he stabbed a woman named Melissa. When officers then met Callejas Gonzalez, he reported that he smoked methamphetamine earlier in the day, and he admitted that he was at 2340 Central Avenue, Apartment 3. Callejas Gonzalez then explained he began to hear voices and believed a female was in distress within the department, documents state. Callejas Gonzalez stated he picked up a knife and poked Melissa in the neck, shoulder area, and continued to ask her, "Where is Jasmine?" Documents do not explain who Jasmine is. Ebony T. Hayes, 30, of Dubuque, told police that she was in the apartment with Honeyfield and Callejas Gonzalez, whom she only knew by his first name. Hayes heard chairs being knocked over in the kitchen, followed by Honeyfield screaming, documents state. Hayes opened the bathroom door and observed Callejas Gonzalez pointing a knife at Honeyfield. Honeyfield was holding her shirt up to the side of her neck and stated Callejas Gonzalez had just stabbed her. Callejas Gonzalez's next court hearing is scheduled for August 15th. Dubuque headquartered Boy Scout Council names new CEO. Officials with the Northeast Iowa Council of Boy Scouts of America have announced a new chief executive officer for the Dubuque headquartered council. Carl Babas will start as Scout Executive CEO effective August 1, a press release states. He will succeed Anna Hudick, who took a position with a different council. Bobas currently works as a field director for the Greater St. Louis Area, Missouri Council. He has worked for the Boy Scouts since 2004 and also held positions with the Northeast Illinois Council and the Bay Lakes Council in Wisconsin. Bobas is also an Eagle Scout and currently is Cub Master for his son's Cub Scout pack. Lancaster to renovate sewage system pumping station. Dateline, Lancaster, Wisconsin. The Lancaster Common Council has approved the design and planning stages to renovate a 50-year-old pumping station in the city's municipal sewage system. The council approved contracting with the engineering firm Strand & Associates for design and related services. Lancaster Public Works Director John Houth said the Memorial Park pumping station was built in the 1960s and processes wastewater for about half the city. The design calls for a submersible wet well to be installed that would pump 2,500 gallons per minute. A separate electrical control building for the pumping station would also be built. Heath estimated the cost at around $3 million, and work would not begin until late 2023. The contract with Strand & Associates was for an estimated fee of $162,000. Event celebrates American Independence, Platteville Museum's artifact collection. Story by Eric Hoogstrom, thmedia.com. Dateline Platteville, Wisconsin. Sterling Reddy's eyes widened as a massive soap bubble he created began drifting farther away and higher into the heavy, humid air. "I like everything about it," the 7-year-old Platteville resident said about today's Heritage Day celebration at the Mining and Rollo Jamison's Museums in Platteville. "I watched people milk a cow, and I got to make bubbles, and I got to wash clothes." Sterling's mom, Lindsay Reddy of Platteville, watched as he used a washing wringer during one of the hands-on demonstrations featured at the event. "We enjoy it," Lindsay Reddy said. "We've come here every year since he was born. It's fun because it's something he doesn't get to do very often." Eric Flesh, the museum director, said the facility's 41st annual Heritage Day celebrates a pair of notable events. The independence of the United States and the 1980 relocation from B-Town, Wisconsin to Platteville of an enormous trove of cultural artifacts gathered during the 80 years by local collector Rollo Jamison. "It really made our regional museum well-rounded," Flesh said of the addition of the Jamison collection. "It tells the story of the way of life in this part of the Driftless region from 13,000 years ago through the 1970s, when the mining industry was still one spoke in the wheel in the economy and the way of life of the people of the southern Driftless area. Heavy rain washed out a series of outdoor events organizers had planned to hold today in Platteville. Museum visitors enjoyed outdoor activities before the storms swept through the southwest Wisconsin. There were plenty of indoor activities, too." Beverly Johansson of Platteville was one of 7 community members to read the Declaration of Independence during the Heritage Day event. Johansson served on the Platteville Common Council when Jamison Collection moved to the city. "It's absolutely terrific," she said of the museum. "It's a one-of-a-kind thing, and getting the Jamison Collection was a spark. This is a real attraction. School kids come and they learn a lot. It's a wonderful place. It's one of the big attractions of Platteville." Barbara Woodworth's 5-year-old daughter, Nora Strange of Platteville, listened intently as museum volunteer Mary Huck demonstrated spinning wool. "We love the museum," Woodworth said. Flesh said the annual Heritage Day event draws about 700 people annually, although he wasn't certain how many the heavy rain would impact attendance. The museum canceled the event in 2020 due to COVID-19, then returned to an in-person event last year. Lindsay and Sterling Reddy walked on stilts outside the museum before the heavy rains came. Lindsay Reddy explained how she wasn't surprised by the size of Sterling's floating soap bubble. "We go to a lot of festivals, and he likes making bubbles," she said. "He's a master at it." Platteville Council discusses airport hangar project, radio for fire department. Dateline, Platteville, Wisconsin. Platteville Common Council members recently discussed plans for a new airport hangar and updated radios for the city fire department. During last week's council meeting, city staff set forth several recommendations for council consideration. One major discussion centered around borrowing up to $700,000 for a new hangar at the Platteville Municipal Airport. Platteville Airport Commission members approved the plans for a new hangar last year, but held off on the project when bids came in over budget. Since then, new federal aid sources have become available that make the $1.18 million project feasible when combined with other existing funding sources. Even though the lowest bid was still high comparative to the pandemic, the airport now has the opportunity to pay for the project at a much faster rate, Platteville Administration Director Nicola Maurer told the council. The reason that the airport would need to apply for a short-term loan is due to the disbursement schedule of the federal money. Maurer told the council that while the airport will receive enough funding to cover the entire project by 2024, it's possible initial invoices will be issued before the airport receives funding. Right now, we're pursuing the idea of a borrower that would be approved that would only be used if there was an invoice that came in and there wasn't yet funding available to pay them, she said. Also discussed last week was a city staff recommendation to approve a $50,000 bid for mobile radio upgrades for the fire department. The department's current radios are at the end of their expected lifespan with the manufacturer and are not P25 digital, a system used by the police department and Southwest Health EMS. The current radios also won't work well with updates announced last year to the radio's infrastructure across Grass County. We've been having issues with the radios and our fire department getting service to just be able to communicate with each other, City Manager Adam Ruschel said. Upgrading the mobile radios for the department would bring improvements in their range and clarity, as well as allow for better communication with surrounding emergency departments. The department solicited bids and four vendors responded. City staff considered radio types, costs, and the company's proximity to Platteville before recommending council members award up to $50,000 for the project to Raycom Corporation, which has an office in Dubuque. That $50,000 would cover the cost of the radios and some service and warranty options. Council members will consider both projects again at the July 12th meeting and vote on whether to approve staff recommendations. Incumbent, retired dairy farmer to face off for Wisconsin's 17th Senate District. Story by Grace Nyland, thmedia.com. Wisconsin voters will choose between a Republican incumbent and a retired dairy farmer to represent the state's 17th Senate District. Senate District 17 covers all of Grant and Lafayette counties, as well as parts of several others in southwest Wisconsin. Incumbent Howard Markleen will face off against newcomer Pat Scogan on the November ballot. Both will appear unopposed in the August 9th primary ballot after candidacy was finalized in June. Democrat Tripp Stroud had announced a decision to run for the seat last year, but he was not included in the State Election Commission's final list of candidates. Stroud could not be reached for comment on why he will not be running. The TH sat down with Markleen and Scogan to discuss their campaigns. Incumbent Markleen has held the 17th Senate District seat since 2015 and is seeking a third term in office. A former accountant, he's now a full-time legislator. Markleen said he decided to run for re-election to, quote, continue the fight for southwest Wisconsin. When asked what he was most proud of in his legislative tenure, Markleen highlighted his position as co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee and working on last year's budget. It doesn't happen very often that you pass a budget that is bipartisan. My fingers were on that budget, and it was a good budget, strong for our taxpayers, good for schools and rural transportation. Pat Scogan, a retired dairy farmer, said she decided to continue her history of advocacy in the 17th Senate District. I'm not afraid to speak up, Scogan said. I've spoken at a lot of rallies and hearings, and I've lobbied at the state capitol. So when they asked, I decided to run. If elected, she said her priorities would be Her priorities would be increased funding for public education and increasing support for small farms in the face of industry conglomeration. Those farm families are our rural communities, Scogan says. They sit on the board of supervisors and serve as town supervisors and clerks. If we lose our agriculture community, we also lose our small rural communities together. Scogan said her background as a former farmer and public school teacher would inform any work done as state senator, and that justice and equity would be central to her work. Free Field Day on Prairie Strips set for July 27th in Jackson County. Dateline, Zwingle, Iowa. A free field day held later this month will examine the practice of adding prairie strips to agricultural land. The event will be held from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. July 27th at the David Gossman Farm, 159th Zwingle, according to a press release. The release states the event is being held by Iowa Learning Farms along with science-based trials of row crops integrated with prairie strips, Jackson County Conservation Board, and the Sand County Foundation. All family members are welcome. The event includes a complimentary meal and a prairie walk. Gossman owns 670 acres in Jackson County, 220 of those in a corn and soybean rotation. He has also established many patches of prairie on his farm beginning in 1996, including several prairie strips. Gossman also harvests timber from his farm that is available through his business, Timber Farm Products. Prairie strips are a conservation practice that integrates small buffer areas of prairie within corn and soybean fields. According to Iowa State University, the practice is designed to reduce soil erosion, improve water quality, and provide for wildlife habitat. The field day will provide practical recommendations for adding prairie strips to corn and soybean fields. Contact Tim Youngquist at 712-269-0592 or timyoung@iastate.edu to RSVP for the event. Local schools, colleges train existing staff to stem teacher shortages. Story by Ali Hinga at thmedia.com. A new program at Clark University in Dubuque aims to help schools stem the tide of teacher shortages by finding future educators among existing staff. Clark's Accelerated Elementary Education degree offers people in roles such as paraprofessionals or substitutes the chance to earn a degree to become teachers while continuing to work in classrooms. We need to figure out a way where we could increase the teacher population in the community and also allow these people the ability to work at the same time. So I think that's really where it came all together for me, said Ellen Spencer, chair of Clark's Education Department. Clark is among schools that have launched programs aimed at helping staff at K-12 schools move forward toward becoming teachers, an effort underway not just locally but across Iowa. Local college and school leaders say tapping into existing staff would find teachers that could help address shortages plaguing the profession. We're hoping that this is an avenue we can use to recruit and retain, so it'd be a win for us and a win for them and our local colleges, said Bruce Brian Cooley, Chief Human Resources Officer for Dubuque Community Schools. The idea for Clark's new program came from conversations with local administrators about the need for more teachers. They've got classrooms of kids and no teacher to provide instruction for them, Spencer said. To meet that need, it made sense to Spencer to tap into paraprofessionals, who fill a variety of roles in schools under teacher supervision. Many of them already have knowledge and experience in the classroom. Plus, they can move into higher-paying jobs with a teaching degree. The knowledge and experience that they bring into this program is priceless, Spencer said. They don't just have the credentials and the licensing to be full-fledged teachers. The first cohort in the program has 16 students, and more people are calling to see if they can start next year. At the University of Dubuque, a program to help paraprofessionals earn an elementary education degree has been underway for about a year. UD offers the major to paraprofessionals in partnership with the Dubuque Community Schools and the Cedar Rapids Community School District. Students take classes through UD's LIFE program, which is geared toward adult learners. Chad Biermeyer, teacher education department head at UD, said the offering started after Dubuque school officials reached out and said they had paraprofessionals interested in getting a teaching license. They're feeling that teacher shortage and they just wanted to use the resources that they have, Biermeyer said. UD's program had about 25 students when the spring semester ended in May. Most came from Cedar Rapids, but several hailed from Dubuque schools. Biermeyer expects 20 more to start the program come August. Clark and UD's program come as Iowa officials also seek to help school staff assess further training. Governor Kim Reynolds last month announced that the state was awarding $45.6 million to schools through the Teacher and Paraeducator Registered Apprenticeship Pilot Program, which helps high school students and adults earn paraeducator certificates and paraeducators earn teaching licenses. Grants were awarded to 19 districts who partnered with other schools to bring funds to 134 districts statewide, including Bellevue, Edgewood, Colesburg, Monticello, and Central. Officials at Loras College in Dubuque said they have a program through which people with four-year degrees in certain content areas take courses to become secondary teachers, though it was not created in response to teacher shortages. Dubuque schools try to encourage paraprofessionals whom they think would be good teachers to consider programs such as the one at Clark and UD. Cooley noted that those staff already enjoy being in the classroom and are familiar with the district's culture. It's a win-win for them to advance their careers and help them in our schools, he said. Cooley said using existing staff to build the district's teaching pipeline not only helps officials fill positions, but also assists with retention. Sometimes when you hire from outside of the community, which is important as well, they move on or they go home or they check out other areas. And it's nice to know that when you're getting people that are local, that they're a little more invested in sticking around, he said. Nate Tyler, Director of Safety and Security for the East Dubuque, Illinois School District, recently started in Clark's Accelerated Degree Program. Tyler left a career in law enforcement in 2013 and since has held a variety of school jobs while taking classes with the aim of becoming a teacher. He currently teaches law enforcement classes to high school students. The East Dubuque District is working towards adding a school resource officer who would work at the high school campus while Tyler works from the elementary building. With an elementary education degree, he will be able to blend his teaching experience with his school safety focus. Writing drug and violence prevention lessons and continuing to teach my career in technical education stuff, which I really enjoy talking about the field of law enforcement, just incorporating it all together. That seems to be my overreaching goal, he said. Intoxicated driver leads Dubuque officers on brief chase. Police said an Illinois man led authorities on a brief chase Sunday night in Dubuque. Isaid Ignacia, 39, of South Elgin, Illinois, was arrested at 9:52 p.m. Sunday in the 2400 block of Asbury Road on charges of eluding, operating while intoxicated, and interference with official acts. Court documents state that police attempted to stop Ignacia's vehicle at North Grandview Avenue and Clark Drive after observing him driving the wrong way on Central Avenue a short time before. A vehicle drove away from officers at the speed limit until reaching a parking lot in the 2400 block of Asbury Road, where Ignacia was taken into custody. Dubuque Fire Department recognized for severe heart attack care. The American Heart Association recently recognized the Dubuque Fire Department for its care of patients suffering severe heart attacks. The fire department received the 2022 Mission Lifeline EMS Gold Plus Award for, quote, its commitment to offering rapid, research-based care to these patients, according to a press release. The award specifically recognizes the care of patients suffering from heart blockage known as an ST elevation myocardial infarction. To prevent death, it's critical to restore blood flow as quickly as possible by either mechanically opening the blocked vessel or using clot-busting medication, according to the release. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, July 5th, 2022 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. George O. Rogers, Dateline Winchester, Oregon. George Orland Rogers, 75, of Winchester, Oregon, passed away on Thursday, March 24, 2022, at his home in Winchester. Graveside services for George will be held in Calvary Cemetery in Cascade, Iowa, at 11 a.m. on Friday, July 8th, with Stephen Strang presiding. George was born March 28, 1946, in Cascade, Iowa, the son of Orland and Loretta Les Rogers. He attended the country schools and graduated from Aquin High School in Cascade. He attended Loras College in Dubuque. George moved to California and later to Oregon. He was united in marriage to Yvonne Bonnie Anderson. To this union, two sons were born, Travis and Kevin. They later divorced. George was united in marriage to Jewel Dodge on March 17, 2006. He was a truck driver in Oregon for many years. He's survived by his wife, Jewel Rogers, his children, Travis, Kevin, Tawny, two stepchildren, David and Michelle, 12 grandchildren, a brother, Michael Cleo, 9 nieces and nephews, and many cousins and friends. Online condolences may be sent to the family at www.ryefuneralhomeinc.com. Ray A. Childers, Dateline, Durango, Iowa. Ray Allen Childers, 65, of Durango, died Saturday, July 2, 2022, at Unity Point Finley Hospital in Dubuque, with his family by his side after a 14-month battle with pancreatic cancer. Visitation will be from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m. Thursday, July 7, 2022, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. The funeral service for Ray will be at 10 a.m. Friday, July 8, 2022, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory with Deacon Michael Ellis. Burial will be at St. Clement Cemetery in Bankston. Ray was born December 29, 1956, in Dubuque, Iowa, the son of Ray F. and Joanne C. Elgin Childers. On September 27, 1980, he married Julie A. Nixon in Des Moines, Iowa. He was a 1974 graduate of Hempstead High School and attended Iowa State University. He was a professional land surveyor at Yagi Colby Associates and then Childers Surveying. Born in Mason City, both in Mason City, Iowa, and he retired from HW Engineers and Surveying in Dubuque in 2015. Ray was a member of St. Clement Catholic Church in Bankston. He loved a Saturday morning breakfast in the bunkhouse with family and friends. He was an avid St. Louis Cardinals fan. Ray enjoyed hunting, John Deere tractors, and NASCAR. He also enjoyed being able to ride Rag Bry several times. He had a great love of farming and was very proud of being able to move back and live on his grandparents' farm, Greenhaven, which he farmed with his brother Randy. He also loved spending time with his grandkids, lighting off fireworks, and giving them golf cart rides. Survivors include his wife, Julie, children, Jennifer Ryan Soat of Asbury, Iowa, Robin Allen, Krista Childers of Durango, Iowa, Emily Eric Martins of Dubuque, Iowa, his mother, Joanne C. Neal Childers of Dubuque, Iowa, 4 grandchildren, Caroline, Olivia, Elijah, and Josephine, 1 brother, Randy Laurie Childers of Dubuque, Iowa, 1 sister, Donna Jeff Hahn of Dubuque, Iowa, 1 brother-in-law, Frank Yvonne Nixon of Hammond, Louisiana, 1 sister-in-law, Colleen Nixon of Des Moines, Iowa, and many nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his father, 1 sister, Connie Bream, and 1 brother-in-law, John Nixon. A memorial has been established for the Centralia Piausta Fire Department. The family would like to extend a special thank you to Deborah Rohr, ARNP, Dr. Herman and Karen Staff, the Wendt Cat Center, and the Centralia Piausta Fire Department for their loving care. A photo tribute can be viewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting the Ray's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Patricia Metcalf, Dateline, Asbury, Iowa. Patricia Lynn Metcalf, 67, of Asbury, died Friday, July 1, 2022, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Thursday, July 7, 2022, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. The service for Patty will be 11:30 a.m. Thursday, July 7, 2022, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. Patty was born October 13, 1954, in Des Moines, the daughter of Charles J. and Ida Lou D. Kaiser Lorette. In 1999, she married Dale M. Metcalf at the Little Brown Church in the Vale in Nashua, Iowa. She attended Eisenhower High School in Blue Island, Illinois, and graduated from Fremd High School in Palatine, Illinois. She received her teaching certificate from William Penn University, Oskaloosa, Iowa. She was a teacher in Eisenhower, Sageville, and Carver Elementary Schools for 35 years before retiring in 2011. She attended Grandview Methodist United Methodist Church. In 1992, she began her calling of caring for 63 foster children until 2009, when she and Dale adopted number 63, completing the family. She loved the color pink, her kitties and poodles. She especially loved her grandchildren. Survivors include her husband, one daughter, Tiffany Brian Q. of Dubuque, two sons, Brent Sarah Phillips of Dubuque, and Robert Metcalf of Asbury, four grandchildren, Ethan, Samantha, Estella, and Brianna, and one sister, Susan Gunther of Asbury, mother and father-in-law, Cindy and Paul Breen of Dubuque, one brother-in-law, Brian Lisa Breen of Peosta, one sister-in-law, Kelly Paul Hansen of Ann Arbor, Michigan, many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, father-in-law Dale Metcalf, senior, one brother-in-law Stephen Gunther, and one sister-in-law Don Marie. In lieu of flowers, a memorial has been established for the Dubuque County Humane Society. The family thanks the care team at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics for taking special care of Patty. Alverna J. Lewis, Dateline, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Alverna J. Lewis, 94, of Cuba City, Wisconsin, passed away Sunday, July 3, 2022, at Sienna Crest in Platteville, Wisconsin. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, July 9, 2022, at St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church, Cuba City, Wisconsin, with Reverend David Flanagan officiating. A burial will be held at 12 p.m. Sunday, July 10, 2022, at St. Rose Cemetery. Visitation for family and friends will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City, Wisconsin, where the parish scripture wake service will be at 3:45 p.m. Friends may also call from 9 to 10:15 a.m. Saturday at the church prior to service. Alverna was born on June 18, 1928, in Dickiesville, Wisconsin, the daughter of Edward and Louise Wagner Ginter. She married James Lewis on May 18, 1949, at Holy Ghost Catholic Church in Dickeyville. He preceded her in death on January 31, 1988. Alverna was a member of St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church for over 70 years, the Catholic Daughters of America, and Catholic Council of Women. She was born on the family farm in Dickeyville, Wisconsin, and attended Holy Ghost Catholic School. She owned and operated the Elmo Club with her husband Jim, and later with her daughter and son-in-law, Donna Randy Wisdom. She made and cherished many lifelong friendships during this time. Alverna enjoyed gardening and puzzles. She was a fierce card player and loved a good game of euchre. But most of all, Alverna cherished her time with her children and grandchildren, celebrating all of their accomplishments. And as she always said, nobody said it was going to be easy. Survivors include four daughters, Diane, Jeff, Cole, Cuba City, Leanne, Dave Baker, Plover, Wisconsin, Lori, Ben, Goman, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, and Donna, Randy, Wisdom, Cuba City, a daughter-in-law, Elaine Lewis, Benton, Wisconsin, 15 grandchildren, and many 27 great-grandchildren, and one on the way, and two sister-in-laws, Ann Phillips and Leona Pete Kenter. She was preceded in death by her parents, a son, Danny, Dennis Lewis, siblings, Edwina, Delvin Lister, Phyllis, Ed Ernst, Wilfred Ginter, Roman Bud Ginter, and Eileen, Andy, Stephen, former daughter-in-law, Kathy Lewis, and many brothers-in-law and sisters-in-law. In lieu of flowers, an Alverna J. Lewis Memorial Fund will be established. Donations may be sent to the funeral home at 123 Jackson Street, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 538. 07. The family wishes to thank Ian Brooks, Deanna Creston, St. Croix Hospice for their care of Alverna in her final days. Online condolences may be left to the family at www.caseymcnett.com. Carolyn J. Hull, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Carolyn J. Jean Hull, 93, of Cuba City, Wisconsin, formerly of Hazel Green, Wisconsin, passed away Wednesday, June 29, 2022. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, August 16, 2022, at Casey McKnight Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City, Wisconsin, with the Reverend Bill Vasey officiating. Burial will take place in the Hazel Green Cemetery. Visitation for family and friends will be held from 9:30 to 10:45 a.m. Tuesday at the funeral home prior to the service. Carolyn Jean Bainbridge Hull was born July 4, 1928 in Benton, Wisconsin, the daughter of Cletus A. and Esther E. Brockman Bainbridge. She graduated from Benton High School in 1945. She attended Platteville Normal School, now the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, and graduated from the Milwaukee County School of Nursing in 1949. She was united in marriage to Robert Hull on November 28, 1950. He preceded her in death on May 13, 1978. Jean was a registered nurse, working primarily as a surgical nurse with Dr. Klein at the Hazel Green Hospital. Her family was a very special part of her life. In retirement, her love was her grandchildren and great-grandchildren and their accomplishments, and also sewing dresses for children in Africa. Her church and Bible studies were very important to Jean. She loved attending the Lead Mine Primitive Methodist Church with pastors Bill Vasey and Bob Bennett. Jean's friends were very important to her, including Dwight and Sharon Clausen, Dennis and Diana Carpenter, the late Robert and Sherry Temperley and family, and many other friends. She is survived by two sons and their families, Stephen Margaret Hull and their children, Brandon Megan Hull, Jessica Albert, Stacy and Sarah Scott Gullickson, and Greg Lisa Hull and their grandchildren, and their children, Emily Nicholas Piper and Joel Hull, Jessica Hull, 12 great-grandchildren, and along with sisters-in-law, brother-in-law, and family members, she's also survived by a special nephew, Tom Bainbridge, a special niece and a godchild, as well as other nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Lead Mine Primitive Methodist Church. The family wishes to thank Midwest Medical Center and Galena Hospice of Dubuque and Sandy Eggers for outstanding care of Jean. Karen K. Miney, Dateline, Monona, Iowa. Karen K. Miney, 75, of Monona, died on Saturday, July 2nd, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday, July 10th, at Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Monona, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Monday, July 11th, at St. John Lutheran Church, Farmersburg, where services will follow. Burial will be in Farmersburg Wagner Cemetery in Farmersburg, Iowa. Maureen G. McAndrews. Maureen G. McAndrews, 71, of Dubuque, died on Wednesday, June 29, 2022. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Friday, July 8th, at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Services will take place at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 9th, at St. Raphael's Cathedral. Burial will be in Holy Family Cemetery. Jean A. Nauman, Cascade, Iowa. Jean A. Nauman, 87, of Cascade, died on Sunday, July 3, 2022. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, July 6, at Wright Funeral Home at Cascade. Mass of Christian burial will take place at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, July 7, at St. Martin's Catholic Church in Cascade, followed by burial in Calvary Cemetery in Cascade. Here's a historical story. Dyersville namesake brought English influence to the community. Story by Laura Drummy, Dyersville Commercial. Dateline, Dyersville, Iowa. James Dyer, Jr., an Englishman, was a dominant figure in the progression of the early days of Dyersville. The town is named after him because of his investment, dedication, and influence on the early settlement. Dyer was born January 9, 1820, in Banwell, Somersetshire, England. When he was a young man, Dyer ran the J. Dyer store where he sold coffee, tea, wine, and general merchandise. He married Anna and Andrews in 1939. In 1839, many people refer to Dyer as Judge Dyer, a reference even seen in many old newspaper clippings and historical documents. While Dyer never had a law degree, the name was given because of his sound judgment and advice. When Dyer was 27, he immigrated to the U.S. with his wife and their three children on August 14, 1847. They settled in Baldwinsville, New York, with relatives. In the fall of 1847, Dyer moved westward to Iowa, leaving his wife and children in New York. At the time, the territory that included the future Dyersville was owned by the government. Dyer brought the acres of the town of Dyersville for $1.25 along with the land north, south, and east of Dyersville. After Dyer purchased the land, Ann and their children also moved to the Dyersville area. They lived on a farm 1 mile southeast of the town, which would currently be behind Beckman Catholic High School. He built a log cabin in which the family lived. Dyer wrote to many of his friends and family, describing the endless opportunities in the new land. In a letter dated February 23, 1849, Dyersville appeared on the address line for the first time. The encouragement from Dyer resulted in a large influx of English immigrants coming to Dyersville in 1850. The English culture and prominence kept growing, leading the new land to mirror their culture with a large, elegantly furnished manor homes. Dyer built his second home on First Avenue East. Currently, the house is Dyer Botsford Doll Museum, owned by Dyersville Historical Society. Dyer inspired construction of new businesses in town, furthering the progression of the small village. By 1853, he had erected a store on the corner of First Avenue and Second Street. He also added a sawmill, gristmill, and the first bridge on First Avenue over the Maquoketa River. The bridge remained until 1860 when it was replaced. In 1857, Dyer opened the 80-room Clarendon Hotel. The railroad also expanded west, coming to Dyersville. The first train arrived on May 5, 1857. Accounts claim there were cheers among the populace. The railroad advanced Dyersville to becoming a public attraction and allowed for hauling goods and freight to destinations 150 miles north and east. The town kept growing, and 800 people occupied Dyersville in 1857. More stores opened and property values soared. An eligible part of Dyersville land could sell for $10 to $15 per foot. The town's flourishing came to an abrupt halt during the fall of 1857. The panic of 1857 shook the markets in town, causing Dyer's enterprises to fail, property values to fall, and the railroad to move westward. The early English settlers began to leave the community and make money elsewhere. Soon, Germans started to immigrate to the area. The town did bounce back during the Civil War. Dyersville played a role in sending men and money to the Union cause. Dyer died at the age of 44 on November 2, 1864. He is buried at Mount Hope Cemetery along with other early pioneers of Dyersville. He was survived by his wife, a daughter Ann, and two sons, Henry and James, who were serving in the Union Army. Here are some local law enforcement reports. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported Caleb A. Warner, 20, of 1325 Cox Street, number 3, was arrested at 8:29 p.m. Sunday at his residence on a charge of second-degree robbery. That's the only report that was filed. City of Dubuque announces location of cooling centers amid high temperatures. The City of Dubuque has announced several facilities at which residents will be able to escape high temperatures this week. The National Weather Service is issuing a heat advisory from noon until 8 p.m. Tuesday, July 5th for Dubuque, Delaware, Jackson, and Joe Davis counties. Heat indices could reach 105 degrees, according to the Weather Service. The public cooling sites in Dubuque are Carnegie Stout Public Library, 360 West 11th Street, open from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Multicultural Family Center, 1157 Central Avenue, open from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Bunker Hill Golf Course Clubhouse, 2200 Bunker Hill Road, open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Here is BizBuzz. Dubuque Yoga Studio changes hand. Car dealing race shop adds auto garage. Longtime gas station closes. Story by Kaylee Reese at thmedia.com. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from across the tri-states. In this edition, we highlight developments in Dubuque and Maquoketa, Iowa. A Dubuque hot yoga studio has changed hands. Meg Rima has stepped up as the owner of Ignite Power Yoga Studio, 4480 Dodge Street. Danny Tusher took over ownership of the studio earlier this month. "I'm not from Dubuque, so it's not my community," Tusher said of the studio. "All the people that go there, the teachers there, are all my community. I just want to keep moving forward and continue to build and grow the community." Tusher said she first started taking classes at night in 2014 and later trained to become a yoga teacher there. "What yoga has taught me the most is the ability to not power through things, but be able to breathe and pause and experience," she said. Rima said she started teaching yoga in her garage in 2012 before opening and founding Ignite in January 2014. She said the studio was the first to bring Baptiste yoga, a type of hot power yoga, to the Dubuque community. Rima said she felt it was time to step down as owner, and she spoke with Tusher about taking on her former role. Rima is still teaching 5 classes per week at Ignite. "My mission when I started the studio was to share yoga in a big way and leave positive impacts on people's lives and the world," Rima said. Danny taking over the studio is a way for the mission to continue. Tusher said she hopes to continue building on the success of the studio, and she is in the process of adding a few more classes to the schedule. Dubuque car detailing shop. Detailing race shop added to automotive garage. A Dubuque business focusing on car detailing and race cars expanded services with the addition of an automotive garage. Cody Brimeyer is the manager of TMR Automotive, an extension of TMR Enterprises at 923 Perot Road. Brimeyer said he took over a portion of the TMR building nearly a year ago. "I came down here last April 2021 and just kind of helped out working detail until my shop got going in August of last year," he said. Brimeyer said TMR Enterprises focuses on vehicle detailing as well as building and selling race cars, but TMR Automotive operates solely as a service center for motorists to get their oil changed or brakes replaced. Brimeyer said he's been working in automotive shops professionally for the past 13 years. He said he was working at a big dealership before discussing opening a shop with Tyler Madigan, which launched TMR Enterprises. The service center is located in the back of TMR Enterprises' 7,000 square foot building. "I like dealing with customers," Brimeyer said. "I like the personal part of that. I'm just trying to run an honest business and have a place where someone can come and trust that I'm not going to try to upsell them." TMR Automotive can be reached at 563-581-3474. The shop is open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Longtime Maquoketa gas station closes. A longtime full service Maquoketa gas station has officially closed its doors. Bowman Oil Company, 601 South Main Street, closed on Thursday, June 30th, which coincided with the retirement of Bill Bowman. Bowman, 66, said he's been working at the gas station for more than 30 years. "If you've seen my station, I have real old pumps," Bowman said. "The talk is that E15 is going to come pretty quick. None of my pumps can handle that. So I decided I might as well just send it. It would cost me way too much to update it for that age that I am." Bowman said his father, Hugh, and his business partner, Dale Kuhn, took over a tank wagon business operated by Harold Hayes in 1959. The pair added a full-service gas station to the property, and the business later turned into Bowman Oil Company. Bill Bowman said he initially worked alongside his father as a partner before eventually taking over the business himself. Bowman said he'd sold the tank wagon portion of the Bowman Oil Company in December to Mulgrew Oil Company and planned to close the station 6 months later. At the time of its closing, Bowman said the business consisted of him and 2 part-time employees. "My relationship with my customers was probably my survival," Bowman said. "We're not on a real busy highway or nothing. Thank God for the loyal people here. I just thank the customers personally for supporting me, or else I wouldn't have made it." And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, July 5th, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.